Lewis, why don't you tell her about how I solve problems in Starfinder?
Have you ever seen that video, Meet the Engineer?
Yes.
Now imagine that being played at 10 times speed on a loop.
Oh.
You're getting close.
You solve practical problems.
Yes.
Everybody, I'm Faith.
I'm Lewis.
And welcome back to Ramblin' Ramblers. This month, we are taking a little break from Shadowrun, and we are going to talk about Lancer. And joining us today, we have Cicada, who spends most of his time playing Lancer, as I understand.
I'm a little bit all over the place, but yeah. Hello, everyone.
So Cicada, tell us a little bit about yourself. What kind of systems have you played besides Lancer?
Aside from the obvious one that everybody's played, I've been all over the OSR scene through, like, Morkborg, all of its clones, DCC and MCC with Pope, recently acquired Shadow Dark and been looking into running that, been playing Starfinder with Pope as well.
Also Whoop.
So that's quite the resume.
Honestly, I'm always trying new systems, if I can.
That's actually what I love to hear.
Yeah, actually, I was just thinking, I feel like more people should be taking a page out of your book now. Like, always try new things. Yes, you can stick with what you're comfortable with, but don't be afraid to step out of your comfort zone and try new stuff.
Exactly. You're never going to know what it's like until you try it.
Mm-hmm. So, worst case scenario, you've wasted an evening.
Yeah.
Which, you know what? People do that all the time.
Yeah, doing less fun things, like trying new stuff. And playing TTRPGs.
It's super fun to binge watch Invincible on the sofa, but you can do that pretty much anytime.
Yeah.
Yep. And trying something new with a bunch of friends is always worth doing.
Hmm.
So, speaking of trying something new, why don't we talk about Lancer a little bit? Like, what a little bit about the lore, and we'll delve into the mechanics, and we'll see what we'll shake up this box and see what falls out.
Ah, yes, a little bit about their lore. For such a small game, it's got an immense amount of historic lore. Like, it's not super broad, like you would see in like D&D with Forgotten Realms, where the whole planet has 1,000 years of history. No matter where you drop that pin, you'll find 1,000 years of history. That's just like, these three places are really fleshed out.
So which three places are really fleshed out?
I forget the name of the planet, but there's the general Earth-ish history. As we left Earth. Then there's the planet from the campaign Wallflower, which we will not do spoilers on. Despite the fact I'm halfway through it and it's really, really good. And they call it the Karakan Trade Baronies. Am I missing any, Cicada?
Yeah, that's like the three main focuses that have been officially covered, yeah. I'd say Lancer kind of went the Star Trek route of lore. Not quite the scope of Star Trek, but in the sense that it's just like...
Today we're looking at this planet. Next week we're looking at this planet.
And it's just, its scope is so vast that you could just get lost in it, but it gives you the freedom to always... do something new with it. Because you have no reason not to. Also, we kind of have that Star Trek ideological edge to it. You know, that kind of like, hey, in Lancer, people can be the best of themselves, finally.
Yes, that was actually one of the things that really drew me to Lancer at the start, was the fact that the big government system that you ultimately work for isn't necessarily a bad guy. Like, the Umbrella is good guy. There's lots of bad guy parts inside, which you're the heroes to get rid of that shit. But ultimately, Union is well-intentioned and doing the best they can.
Is Lancer developed by, like, a big studio, a little studio. I say studio because I can't think of the correct word. Developer, that's the word.
I believe it is between 1 and 3 people, depending on when you ask this question.
As of 2024.
Right now, maybe 3, maybe 4, but I'm not too sure exactly either.
Well, I guess a better question is, who is the developer? Like, what's the developer name?
So the company is Massive Press. But I'm honestly really surprised with Lancer, because it is a D20 indie-based game, and Cicada, we're going to bully you a bit to talk on how you've seen some 4E D&D overlap.
Yes, yeah, it reminds me a lot of 4E, because I'm one of those weird people who started in 4E D&D. Don't judge me out there, everyone.
It's fine.
What happened is what happened. But anyway, I do see some mechanical similarities, especially with the way they expect, like, narrative, like, clocks to work and things like that. Just basically doing a skill check in Lancer was like doing a skill check in 4E, but simpler. And that's what a lot of Lancer's core mechanics feel like. It was like, oh, this is what they were trying to make work in 4E, but more straightforward.
In Lancer, so you're talking about skill checks and stuff. So is this like a party of adventurers just set in space, or what's the deal?
I wouldn't quite say adventurers, because it's much more solidly you're the good guys than that for Lancer.
There's also not a lot of exploring per se. Like, there is, not a spoiler, but there is a fair bit of, like, do we do left path or right path in Wallflower and whatnot. But there's no, you have to travel for 3 days to get to the next place, but you only have 2 days of food. Also, there might be some booby-trapped goblin mines on the way, and like, there's no between parts, really. It very much has just the two pillars of... So D&D is famous for having the three pillars of social, combat, and exploration. Lancer does not have exploration. And I'm being generous by saying it has the social.
Again, this is where I draw that comparison back to Star Trek, because it's just like, well, you could literally just every episode, okay, you're here now.
Yep.
Makes sense.
And I think that's largely what I did with our campaign. Cicada, like, there was a couple of bits where you largely got to choose a left fork, right fork, and you got to choose what the next mission would be, what the next scene would be, because missions capitalized and has a different meaning in Lancer. There's no, you're bumbling around in Townthorpe, time to go to Cityton, how are you going to do it?
Oddly enough, it's one of those few games where, like, downtime actions as a mechanic works.
Mm-hmm.
Because in other games, there's always so much exploring and socializing going on that you're never thinking mechanically, oh, I'm going to take this downtime action, unless you're sitting at home preparing for it.
Mm.
Whereas in Lancer, it's just like, well, of course I'm going to do this, because what else am I going to do?
Now, before we get too far away from it, when I say Lancer doesn't have an exploration thing, I'm not saying that as a failing on Lancer. Like, it's just not a thing they're interested in.
No, it's just a result of the way their world building is set up, and it's not necessarily a flaw. It's just a different lens of looking at it.
Star Trek is a really good comparison, because you really do jump from this thing to the next thing to the next thing, be that all action all the time or interspersed with social or whatever. It's always you're now doing a thing. You're in a moment.
Yes. It's very much built on that kind of, like, TV cuts of what's happening.
So what is a Lancer, then?
Cicada?
A Lancer is basically your stereotypical best of the best ace mech pilot. In Lancer, you get to be the person who jumps in a giant robot and goes to save the day.
So you're a Gundam pilot, so to speak?
So to speak, that would be an easy comparison. But you could, honestly, the thing with Lancer is, even you could completely throw away its stock setting if you wanted to, and play any kind of sci-fi, we're in robots game you really wanted. Nice. So yeah, you could be a Gundam pilot. You could be a Power Ranger. Doesn't matter. You're the good guy. You're going to save today. You have the robot. You know, that is the core premise of what a player will get out of Lancer.
That's pretty awesome, actually. Basically, it doesn't matter who you're fighting. You're on the side of good and righteous.
That's the intent, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that is very much how the book frames it at you.
Honestly, I think, frankly, like the actual developer has said, no, this is how you should be playing.
Yeah.
I cannot source this or cite it, but from what I understand of the chap, that seems to be how he wants the system to be played. And it comes off really well, honestly. And as I said earlier, like the fact that your good guy is working for the good guy, rooting out the bad elements of the good organization, that was just such a nice change of pace. I was very deep in Shadowrun at the time, so it was a big change of pace.
Yeah, Shadowrun, where everyone is morally ambiguous at best.
Yeah. Damn it, Depp.
That's not morally ambiguous.
I mean, I think Misha's like the nicest being amongst us, and he's a mafiosa drug dealer.
That's saying something.
To build his empire.
I can't even say anything good about half the characters I play in other systems. Oh my god.
Which is weird because you're such a nice person. Do you just play evil to get that out of your system or something?
Well, Lewis, why don't you tell her about how I solve problems in Starfinder?
Have you ever seen that video, Meet the Engineer?
Yes.
Now imagine that being played at 10 times speed on a loop.
Oh.
You're getting close.
You solve practical problems.
Yes. Including socially.
Yes.
Well, why don't we get into a little more detail about the mechanics of Lancer? Like, how do you pilot the mech? Is it similar to just playing a character in, you know, 4th edition?
So largely, you are just playing the mech. For all the combat, it's essentially your character. The pilot is inside, but doesn't exist in any way, shape, or form, except for incredibly niche moments, such as one of the enemies have a core worm type thing which will burrow through the mech and kill the pilot inside, which has never once worked for me.
The never. One time you used it on the time that it wouldn't have mattered.
No, I did use it another time, and I proceeded, and it's like a D3 plus 3 rounds to turn these things off, and I rolled it, and then I looked at the round, and it was like, oh, you only have 2 rounds left. D3 plus 3 is more than 2. So that was a fun waste of an action. But so for the most part, you are playing a large, stompy robot. The system greatly enjoys hexes, a hex map. Though I've seen good things from square grids, the common square grid, but there's just an unwritten rule somewhere that may as well be written down at some point, that sci-fi equal hexes. If you're playing a sci-fi game, it's hexes. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta account for the extra directionals.
See, they didn't have 60-degree measures in fantasy times, only 90-degree measures.
Makes sense. They weren't advanced enough. The magic didn't come so far yet.
I've read a few times, I don't know how true it is, but I've read a few times somewhere that Lancer was originally developed using squares, but at some point they were just like, yeah, nope, hexes.
You don't really see too many hex map games these days. At least not for tabletop.
It's very much, I don't want to say better, but it definitely has a much cozier feeling for me for skirmish games. I come from third edition D&D, where it is very much a skirmishy game. I have at least 2 RPGs on my shelf which openly mock the idea of opportunity attacks, and they are specifically digging at third edition on this, but without saying it, because third edition was terrible for it. Like it exists in fourth and fifth, and exists in Pathfinder as well, but third edition came along and went, no, we're gonna make this our fucking thing. And it was good. I enjoyed it. It's just, you know, it is a skirmish. If that's not what you're after, it's not what you're after. But yeah, I think that extra angle is nice. Though I have seen that they're looking to go back to squares for Icon.
I haven't really looked at Icon at all, to be honest.
It's currently suffering from my deliberate playtest blindness. One of my friends has had a look here, and he says it's cute, it's nice, but... And it is a really big butt. I cannot lie. he was explaining to me how, like Lancer, they've got the combat and out of combat as separate phases. Whereas with D&D, it's all kind of like rubbed together, and like you have your bluff skill is on the same maths as your jump skill and. In third edition, I don't quite know how it works in fifth, to be perfectly honest, because there's stuff in third edition just exists in a huge amount of my brain. You'd use your skills in and out of combat for pretty much everything, and like it was all just your character. And I know that is true for fifth edition, I just don't know how much skills in combat play. But in Lancer, you've got your mech, you're in the combat, and you do the combat stuff with the mech. Out of that, you do your social, which has its own little system, which is largely the same. It's just very, very muted. But what he was saying for Icon was that your basic, it's not just a slightly muted version of the system, it's an entirely different system. And I don't like reading playtests. I've covered this a lot, but I really want to have a look into this because that sounds very odd as a choice for me. Because basically you'll go 1 week, okay, it's combat, we're doing third edition combat, okay, cool. Right, now we're out of combat, we're going to use Blades in the Dark because it just feels more fun. And that kind of shift just feels weird to me.
Yeah, because you have two very different kinds of systems back to back with each other, so that shift in mechanics can seem jarring.
Like, it's already a little bit jarring in Starfinder when we shift from like people combat to ship combat,
and that's still within like the same general mechanical system,
but it really does shift, doesn't it? Because it goes from squares, it goes to hexes, and then initiative is scrapped for just a rank. And I'm not going to talk about Starfinder in the Lancer session, but yeah, it's I like when there's the minimal shift possible. Like in Shadowrun, your attacking ability is a skill. It's literally just your pistol's skill, which you level up at the same rate, at the same costs as your etiquette skill. And you roll these skills in exactly the same way, and it's the same character in combat, out of combat, exploring, whatever you're doing. I don't think Shadowrun could survive having to shift systems. Mid-game. It's already complex enough. But, Lancer, tell us about the mechs, you fiend.
Well, Lancer's great for that because it gives you so many.
Yeah, there's 28? 28. Near 30 in just the core book, I think.
And one of the most, like, customizable and robust character creation systems I have ever seen. Because if we're being real, what you do with the mech is your character, so...
He was not fucking wrong. I sat down one day, and I was just... Like, talents aside, because talents are another thing you can choose, literally just what weapons you could put onto that level 0 Everest frame. I was going through it, and they... How many combinations, like unique combinations as well. So it's not like the orcs mount had a pistol missile launcher and then another one had a missile launcher pistol. Like that, the a unique mount would be different. And then I can't remember the number, but it got fucking big. Like really stupid big. And like this is level 0. With the core book and with a large part of it like just ignored because I was already aware that a big number was coming, did not want to have a bigger number in my face.
So I have a question. since we're talking about mechs being the characters, how do you go about building a character, or a mech rather? Like, what's the skinny?
I think first we'll start with the pilot, because that's pretty simple. Like, you just have a human. There are no fantasy races, there's no Klingons, there's no whatever. Humanity has gone out into the stars, and like, a big thing about Lancer is that there are no aliens. But then they talk about monstrosities in the NPC section. So I think there's, like, you know, like, Xeno wildlife is, like, an assumed thing. Like, you'll eventually find something, but, like, the corporate line is, there are no aliens.
So everybody's human, basically?
Yes.
Okay.
And you just have
a bunch of... that generic human fighter.
Well, I mean, everyone's the fighter.
Well, man.
Really? You're in a fucking mech. Even the healer mechs are just like... Well, I mean... I think the healiest mech would be the Lancaster.
Yes. It's basically a giant, like... It's basically one of those giant, like, robot dogs. He's just a good boy, and he's here to help you feel better.
And yet, he will wreck face as well as anyone.
Again, mostly due to Lancer's really customizable and robust character building.
Mm. Alright, so your pilot is a standard human fighter, I guess. So, what comes after that?
To totally not put Cicada on the spot, and also definitely not because I would like to eat some noodles. Cicada, would you finish off how to build a pilot?
You know what? I will. I'm going to run you through this step by step. Because Lancer has a very great web app that will run people through this step by step, and it's actually the best freaking companion app to a role-playing game I have ever seen. Just sitting out there for free.
You said it was a Lancer app. I do believe it is third party.
I believe it is third party, but like officially supported.
Yeah, I think from my understanding, it's nothing to do with Massive, but Massive really like it.
Yeah, they link right to it from their website. Mm,
big fans. And yeah, it is honestly fantastic. Like, I have seen a bunch of online character compendiums, and this is hands down the best. But do continue, sorry.
So I will literally step-by-step run this through as this web app does it with you. So you create a new pilot. You give him a name. You give him a call sign. This is what's going to probably come up most often, because this, you know, you're the best of a best mech pilot. You need a quick name to be known by, and you pick a background. Backgrounds are not mechanical, they're just flavor, so you can pick one of their suggested ones or just make one up. So you have the basics of, like, a character now. Comes next is skill triggers. Skill triggers are Lancer's equivalent to skills out of combat, except they're just basic things. Lancer basically waves away most narrative situations with a talk your way through it. If you need to roll, you might get some bonuses if you've got this trigger. It keeps it really simple, because let's be real, everyone's in this for the giant robots punching each other. When you create a character, you pick up four different skills to have a +2 bonus with when you roll.
And this is a D20 based system. We haven't covered that part yet. So that is literally just D20 +2 in these four vague skill areas.
Yes, very vague. Like, some examples out of this list are things like blow something up, or stay cool, or, you know, charm.
Yep.
Very, very, very generic. It says you can make up your own, but they always have to be more specific than the ones that are there. I haven't figured out a situation where I'd want something more specific than the ones that are there. I'm sure it exists, but I haven't thought of it yet.
But there's a fair few of them. What have we got here? We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm not counting any more than that. But there's, you know, there's two pages of it in the book.
Yeah, there's like four categories and about four or five in each category.
And then, you know, they're deliberately vague, so I don't know why you would need a more specific one on top of that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm sure there is some niche thing going on in a campaign that would benefit a specific character. But that is for your game, not for our conversation.
And it's nice that it's like officially left the door open for this.
Yes. Then you pick three talents. Now, talents are like your in-combat skills. These are the fun ones. These are the ones that give you mechanical bonuses when you're in your mech.
These are like feats, I've always thought the most.
Yeah. And there's like three tiers of each that you can progressively go deeper into this tree of feet. And these are all over the place. These are all over the place from let your mech run really hot for bonus damage to have a unique weapon that you created to tell a guy what to do. Give him a bonus.
Shoot harder.
These kind of help you flavor your character and basically build a class.
Mm-hmm.
So there are different types of classes?
There's different types of roles, and you build yourself to fit into one.
Gotcha. Okay. So is it the holy trinity of tank healer and DPS, or damage per second?
There's actually five kind of roles that they separate things into. So you have your striker, who is your typical DPS, but more of a frontline DPS. Like, your strikers are the ones that are going to get up there and do most of the in-your-face fighting.
Strikers double as tanks.
Yeah.
Though
sometimes.
Yeah, they need to be an off-tank, I think, because you are just up in everyone's face all the time.
Exactly. Then on the inverse end of that, you have artillery, which is their job is to basically stay away from the fight as much as possible and just lay down a curtain of fire. These are your sorcerers. These are your wizards, essentially, if I'm going to compare it.
Yeah, I'm not offended. It feels weird, but I'll allow it.
If it makes you feel better. These are your warlocks, just Eldritch blasting all day long. Then you let we're gonna get into some of the more confusing categories, like controller. Controller is weird because in a sense you're half a debuffer, half harassment. Your job is basically to like what it says. This is where Lancer feels very gamey
in my robot skirmish game. Never.
In the sense that anyone who plays a lot of like video games like that will understand what controller means. It's just, in a sense, it is what it says. You're meant to control the environment of the battlefield, manipulate it into your advantage. And this can be done in all kinds of different ways. So controller is a very broad group.
They all are. And then weirdly, some of them have double roles as well, which is just baffling.
Yep. You have your supports, which again, very broad group. This is anything from like the Lancaster healing support to tech support to building literal like defenses on the battlefield to hide behind. And then you have defenders, who are your true tanks. Their job is to stop damage from happening.
All right, that makes sense.
And just to quickly nip this in the bud, these are not exclusive, like limiting channels that your character falls in.
These are just general roles that people tend to specialize towards.
Mm-hmm.
But again, with the way Lancer works, you can build in multiple directions.
Yeah, like I think so. Artillery and striker definitely have like the most overlap, I think.
Yes,
because they are both damage per round types, and really it's just the range question. But you can take a support mech and most of them will quite happily become a striker with a bit of a push. And every single mech can take an assault rifle, and every single assault rifle does the same regardless of what mech it's on. Unless you add stuff to it, but shh.
Alright, so we've covered the different roles that a mech cover. Sorry, mm-hmm. play. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
No problem.
So what comes after the
talents?
Yeah, the talents.
After that would be... Now, the naming of this will never not bother. After this, you choose your pilot mech skills, which are... They're your stats. They're your mech stats. Why they call them skills, I will never understand. They are your stats. Most people... The categories are hull, agility, systems, and engineering. Most people just simply refer to this as haze. And basically, you have to start with, you have 2 points. You put points into these things. They affect certain things during gameplay because you will have to roll these stats when things happen. Engineering does things like increase the amount of like limited charges on systems and give you more heat. Hull gives you more health. You know, agility makes you harder to hit or makes you faster. Systems makes you better at dealing with hacking attacks, which is a thing in Lancer. Those are like...
It also lets you have more systems. The fact that systems and systems are both referenced and are separate things does bug me a little bit, but...
Lancer has this weird thing where wording overlaps a lot.
Mm-hmm. I remember one of the frames, the Goblin, it's got a core power, which we'll touch on in a minute, which says something like you can use your... and adjacent friends' systems, and this started a big cycle discussion as to whether your friend could use your systems, and this started a big cycle discussion as to whether that meant my system stat or like the systems on my mech, and like it's your system stat because the other one doesn't make any sense, but it's because systems and systems are different things.
Sounds like a systemic issue.
Is fun.
So at that point, you have created your pilot. You have a character now.
Mm-hmm.
After that, all characters start at a level zero. Level zero is not as bad as it sounds. You have a lot of options right at level zero. Like, this is a game where you live in going back to Star Trek, a post-capitalist society. So you just have your stuff. You just have this list of things you can pick equipment and gear from. There is no shopping episode in Lancer.
And I love it for that.
It is both a blessing and a curse, because if you have players who have issues with choice paralysis, oh boy, are they not ready for Lancer.
But yes, but also no. Because, I mean, yes, there's a lot of choices, and a lot of options, but there's no cost to trying them. And this is something that I would definitely talk with them. Like, obviously, you know, if they're struggling, like I would be jumping in there to help as best I can. But if you said, hey, I don't know which one I want to take between the assault rifle, like I've got a spare flex mount. Do I take an assault rifle or do I take 2 missile racks? And, you know, first thing, I'd look at what talents you've picked, because your talents benefit certain things in certain ways. And we'll firstly see if there's any synergy there. Then we'll have a look at your mech itself, see if there's any synergy there. And if, you know, ultimately is just, I can't decide between these two equally good things, you can swap them at the end of the mission. You can play with the 2 missile racks and go, these are actually really cool, but I don't like having to reload all the time.
We'll go into building a mech. I'm going to just do this from the perspective of, you just have the core book. This is your first time doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You make a mech. You give your mech a name, because of course you would. It's like someone naming their car.
Gypsy Danger. It's gotta be Gypsy Danger.
You only have one choice right at the start at license level zero. The good old General Massive Systems Everest. Even though it is your level zero choice, it never stops being a bad choice. And that's the interesting thing about Lancer, is it never really gives you stuff that's better. It just gives you stuff that's more specific.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's the beauty of its system, is nothing is overpowered because everything is.
Can't fail game balance if there's no game balance to start with. Though exactly. that sounds worse than it is. The game is surprisingly well done.
Yes, it is. It is a balanced game. It's just I'm wording it this way because it does fulfill that mech power fantasy. It's, I'm in a big, powerful robot. Big, powerful robot does big, powerful robot stuff. It never fails in that regard. Everything it gives you that feeling.
Mm-hmm. So you get your Everest.
Yep. You know, it has a bunch of stats built into it. You know, things like, do you have armor to defend with? What are your hit points? Now, your hit points will seem low with Lancer, but that's not the end of the game, because you have things like structure, because, you know, you're a big robot. So losing your hit points doesn't mean the end. It means losing a structure and having something bad occur. It's this kind of slow degradation.
Mm-hmm. Because that's something that caught me off when I first got into Lancer. Because I was looking and I was like, okay, most of these weapons are doing like an average medium-sized weapon is doing a D6 of damage. I've got 10 hit points. How is this feasible? But no, it's because you have arguably 4 hit health bars.
Yes.
In theory, you do have 4 health bars, but each time you lose one of these health bars, there's a really cool little roll where you will roll on this chart to tell you what part of you fails, really. Like, yeah, it might be a gun blows up, or now you're fine, or, well, that was fun. And these get progressively worse, so I think there's only something like a 30% chance that you'll actually ever see your fourth structure. But
don't I know it.
Don't rely on using all 4 of them. Just know that there's more than one.
But it's a great way that builds tension over several combat, because the way Lancer is built, you're not going to get, you know, your repair, which is the equivalent of a D&D long rest, until a cup. Like, you're going to have to wait for that. So it creates this increase of tension as your damage slowly creeps up. You also have, like, heat, but heat is a different kind of resource.
Yep.
And, you know, you'll have stats of, like, equivalent to AC, except you have it both to be hit and to resist things like hacking.
So it's like, you know, what spell resistance used to be in 3rd edition.
Yes. You know, you'll have your attack bonuses, you'll have the amount of spaces you move in a turn, and you'll have sensors, which is an interesting stat addition, because this basically gives range for all your, like, computers-based things.
All your hacks.
Yes. So instead of having every individual thing have to have its own range, no, it's just built into what mech you're in.
Which is nice. It's very nice and simple. Yep. No complaints. No real notes either.
All mechs have frame traits. Most have 2. Some will have 3. I think there is one with effectively 1. It does have 2, but 1 is just it's really just a meme.
Which one's that one? I'm scared now.
Gun.
Oh, yeah, gun.
Is that supposed to be a play on pun?
No, it is a gun that is a gun.
Oh, jeez.
Like, that is the description of this actual mechanical trait. It's just gun. So, awesome. But going back to this, though, you have 2 frame traits with the Everest. They are both extremely good. Oh, yes, mm-hmm. You also have repairs that you can use. I forgot to mention that. So all mechs have, like, a number of repairs they can use over their battles to kind of stave off that slow degradation.
Yep.
So going into Everest and its frame traits, it has replaceable parts. Because these things are everywhere, they're easy to repair. While resting, the Everest can be repaired at a rate of 1 repair per 1 structure damage instead of 2. So basically, it heals better because they're everywhere, because you don't have to worry about finding parts.
Which makes it even more likely for you to tick through more of them hulls, those structures.
Yep. Essentially, right off the bat, it gives you something that you can play aggressively with.
Hmm. Jesus Christ, can you?
And its other frame trait is basically once per combat, you get an extra action for free.
So that is something I'd like to talk about, because the action economy in Lance is really quite interesting.
It is. Please go ahead.
It is largely the same as how Shadowrun does it, where movement's just a thing that can be done. And then you have either 2 smaller actions or 1 larger action. Which I imagine, I think this is, I say imagine, I'm going to have to ask you if this was 4E as well, because I can't remember specifics of 4E, despite quoting the Monster Manual earlier today, Jesus Christ, because they, in 3rd edition and Pathfinder, there was a thing called a full action, which consumed your whole move and standard action.
I'm pretty sure they were still in 4E as well.
But yeah, so you've got two actions that you can spend to do two simple things, or you can take a larger action, which will be a more complicated thing. Things that you can't do is repeat the same action, so you can't simple action, shoot that guy, simple action, shoot that guy. But you can use the barrage action, which lets you shoot two guns, largely, which is basically the same as taking the shoot action twice, so... Yeah, but there's also other things that you do that in between. And I keep saying simple action. It is a quick action. Don't want to be wrong here. I often am. I'm so often wrong. Jesus Christ. But yeah, it's quick actions and a full action, I believe.
Yeah, that is the wording.
Irrespective of these, your movement is just a thing that you can do on your turn. It is not an action to move. There is additionally a move again action, and a bunch of the other actions available to you will allow you to move, but like your normal standard movement is just a thing you can do. So have at, it's not an action.
Yes, and that trait basically gives you one turn of one extra free, like one extra quick action. So any game where you have an option to have more action economy is going to make a huge difference. That's just mechanically true.
Yeah.
Now, frames also have something called a core system, and a core system will have a core power, and your core power is essentially, it's your ultimate move, you know, it's your game-changing thing. Yeah. In the frame of a campaign, you're going to get to do this once over the course of like a whole mission, so pick your timing.
Mm-hmm.
The Everest, once again, plays into just ridiculous action economy.
Yeah, this is when you go Super Saiyan.
Yeah, this is when you go Super Saiyan. So basically for the rest of that particular combat, you get +1 accuracy, and we should probably explain accuracy at this point.
Yes, this... if anyone's familiar with the D&D advantage-disadvantage system, it is similar to that in how it affects the game. You get boosts on the roll versus negatives on the roll, but it's a d6 rather than a second d20 dropping the lowest, and you tally up all your accuracy bonuses and you tally up all your difficulty bonuses and they zero out. So if you've got 3 accuracy and 2 difficulty, that's 3 minus 2, that's 1 accuracy. You roll 1d6 on top of your d20 and everything else you'll add. And from all the dice, and if you have 3 difficulty and 2 accuracy, that's 1 difficulty overall. And from all the d6s that you roll extra for accuracy or difficulty, you use the largest one. And that's true if it's the accurate or difficulty. So difficulty, stacking difficulty sucks. Stacking accuracy rocks.
Although it should be noted that anything after 2 in either direction is diminishing returns.
Yeah. Like 3, I think, is the golden number from my personal experience. No maths behind that. Can definitely do the maths on that. I just don't want to.
People have.
Mostly because people have. Like, I don't need to. And I don't want to. That +1 accuracy, like all the time, is incredibly useful. Not just because it gives you between 1 and 6 more on your attacks, but it also gives you that one buffer against having a difficulty yourself.
Yep. And it should be noted that in the case of the Everest, this one accuracy is on all attacks, checks, and saves. So it's just a flat bonus on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the only thing this court power does. It also lets you boost, which is normally a quick action, as a free action every turn. So that's more action economy and more movement every turn, which, as you can imagine, gives you a lot of control of the battlefield and a lot of more freedom to just use your actions to attack or do other things.
There was an absolute beautiful game where I got to play, and a operator, like a long-range sniper type, turned up. We were all like in the center of the map, and this operator turned up pretty much just where we started, but also up on a cliff. And the Everest player was like, "Oh, can anyone deal with this? I've only got a shotgun." And I was like, "Aye, you can do it." And then he sits there for a little minute and he looks at all the stuff he's got. And yeah, he just moves half the fucking map, shotguns this guy in the face, and then just moves half the map again. And he was exactly where he was prior to his turn. Just now there was a dead sniper in the forest. It was beautiful. Once you use that power-up core system, you basically get to take your move, as we've already just discussed, as just a thing you can do. And then you can take the boost, which is also a fancy move. It's really the same as your normal move, but with an extra keyword attached.
It's dashing, but simpler.
Dashing, but simpler. But also not. Like, this is something that I realize every time I actually analyze Lancer. It is a horribly complicated game with a keyword search involved. Like, you do this thing with this keyword, which triggers this other thing with a keyword, which doesn't trigger this response because this response only triggers under these keywords. And like, it's done well. I am looking forward to Lancer 2, but so what I do on my server where I run all these games is, like, I run a load of one-shots that people can just turn up to having never heard the system and they can play. And I also run Lancer, because there's quite a bit that you need to know before your first game. Not least of all is actually building your own mech. And honestly, building your mech is so simple, you can pretty much just throw a couple of darts at a dartboard and you won't have a bad mech. It won't be optimized, it won't be like super synergistic, but it will function really well because the game is really nice and tight like that. But it's a little bit more than just, hey, roll a d20 and add this number.
Yeah, definitely very true.
But yeah, the Everest also has a nice amount of mounts. Goodness me. And this is like weapon slots for the mech. And they have various types. So the Everest has a main mount, which lets you have like your average weapon, the assault rifle that I keep talking about. The flex mount lets you either have a main weapon, so a second assault rifle, or two smaller weapons. The heavy mount lets you have heavy weapons. The smaller weapons I mentioned earlier were called AUX weapons. And those are like pistols and missile racks and like very small things that attack en masse rather than with mass. That was a weird way of describing it, not gonna lie. And you can put smaller guns in bigger slots, but like the main mount will hold a main weapon or a main AUX or a AUX weapon. So if you're going to put a pistol where you could have an assault rifle, you can. I just have questions. It's not wrong. I just have questions. I just want to talk to you. But yeah, having those three mounts means that you have that really nice versatility between having three weapons that can do three various things. I think the first one I ever had was, I had in my flex mount, I had two thermal pistols because I was going for a pyro build. And at level one, there's not really a lot of pyro builds. At level zero, and the thermal pistols just like it's almost the smallest amount of damage you can get out of a weapon, but they've spread it over a line. And so I'd get to shoot two of these lines each time, which was pretty cool. And I also had a howitzer, I believe, which is the big fucking gun. And that gave me, you know, a lot of versatility, because the howitzer's got a huge range, huge damage, but the you need to reload, you need to spend a full action to reload. Well, you can reload stuff as part of a full action, which lets you reload any number of things. So I eventually swapped into having missile racks and a howitzer, because then I was reloading three things instead of just the one thing, and like the, you know, you can see the build already beginning to spin up here. And none of this like cost it. There was no investment to it. It was just you lock yourself in for the mission, and you're like, this mech has these things. You then have a bunch of scenes in that mission. At the end of the mission, you go, cool, I'm going to do these other things now. Some mechs have more mounts, less mounts. Many of them have various different kinds of mounts, like the Barbarossa, the big, big boy. He's got two mains and a heavy. A lot of the smaller mechs have just a couple of flexes, I think. Oh no, the Duskwing's got a flex and an Orx. The Orx is the same as a flex mount, except you can't put a single main weapon in it. The Black Witch only has one mount. Interesting. But yeah, this lets you do builds and interesting things. And then there's also equipment things as well on top, where you have a limited amount of system points, which are derived from your system stat, but they are distinct. These system points are added onto the system points given to the frame. Some frames have more system points, some have less. Depends on how versatile that frame is at having little smaller things. And these give you cool things like having mech-sized grenades or turret drones or like an anime EM field, which I found is a little bit OP in certain regards. In the campaign I'm playing in, the goblin player, and goblins are all about hacking, has realized that how he can use the Type 3 projected shield, which is a really cool little system. Basically, you point to anyone on the field. Both of you have two difficulty shooting or punching one another, but not hacking with your computers, which behooves the goblin quite well, because the only gun they have never actually shoots, because it's got a fancy rule where it just does a thing instead, and the goblin is all about hacking. So he just points at a guy and says, hey, you, we're going to suck at doing everything except the thing I like doing. And it also generates a bit of self-heat, which triggers a talent he has, which means that he's fucking terrifying. Just roasting motherfuckers. It's hilarious. But yeah, there's loads of options. You can even make your mech fly, which I don't know. I kind of feel like all mechs should fly at this point, or at least do big jump.
Just jump good.
Yeah. I run a lot more than I play. I think that's fair to say. And I think Cicada has probably played in more of my games than anyone else.
I wouldn't claim that, but I played in a lot of them, yes.
But a lot of you played in more of my Lancer games than anyone else, I think.
Possibly, yeah.
But I feel like the ability to fly during a boost or whatever, like that should just be assumed. I don't think like terrain, it either matters or it doesn't, and it's so easy to make it not matter. Most of the mechs that don't care about it either have the ability to ignore it, or we'll just go, nah, I'm just going to stand still for the entire game. Which are both incredibly valid. It just feels weird that I'm expected to make this interesting terrain with all this interesting interaction with difficulty and whatnot, and then half the group just say, no, we're stationary motherfuckers, and the other half go, yeah, well, we fly.
See, in that regard, I think you could probably make some of your terrain features taller, so people can't see past them.
Mostly because I don't want to have to deal with line of sight.
But that's the only way to make them work.
It's true.
So, what else goes into character creation? Because I feel like we've gotten pretty off topic.
Oh no, that's it. You're done.
Oh,
yeah, you're done. But you have created your level zero character. You are ready to fly.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So specifically, the Everest that you have has a budget of 6 system points. Most of the systems on there cost 2 system points each, so just choose 3 of them. And then you've got those 3 mounts that I was talking about. Just choose 3 guns from the related size, and you're done.
I was expecting something more complicated because of what I've seen in our MechMania channel.
That's so, because as you start to level up, you start to get more options.
Yes, and this is where what Cicada was saying earlier, where things don't get better, they get more specific.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense.
So when you hit, every time you finish a mission, you will level up. And every time you gain a level, you don't like get +1 level as a fighter. You invest that level by essentially, I'm going to say buying, but that's not really how Lancer narratively works. You invest that level to buy the first license level of any of the other mech frames. And that comes, and once you've got that, each of those holds a number of systems, weapons, and things that are now on your plate that you can now mix and match with the stuff you already have. I find it strange the number of people who seem to have been blown away that you can take Gorgon talents and put them in Gorgon systems and put them into a Genghis. I don't think that's a very good example. I don't think you should do that, but yes, that is a thing you can do.
And that's where that like huge amount of customization comes in, because as you unlock more things, you start to like pick certain targets and combinations, and essentially there are no character classes because you build your class out of a bunch of pieces the way you want it to be.
And to quickly touch back on how I keep saying you don't get locked out of things, once you've invested any number of license levels in, call it the Death's Head frame, and you decide, oh, the Death's Head isn't for me, when you level up and would get a third one, in addition to getting a third license level, which doesn't have to be the Death's Head, by the way, you can have 2 levels of Death's Head and then take 1 level of Genghis for, honestly, possibly some fun. In addition to gaining the license level, you can shift any number of licenses you have from any one frame all into one other frame. So you can go, okay, I'm not enjoying this level. So I'm level 2. I've got 2 levels in Death's Head, and say, I don't enjoy the Death's Head anymore. I'm going to, and it doesn't matter which way you do this round. You can either level up Death's Head to 3 and then take all 3 and put them into the Barbarossa, or you can put what your new one into Barbarossa and then take your 2 to get 2nd and 3rd level Barbarossa, which is a very similar but different kind of mech. They're both very long range. Barbarossa is slightly more stationary. Slightly. So, you know, you can play as... what's that one that you used to play, Cicada? The Morning Cloak?
No, I don't think I've ever actually played Morning Cloak.
Oh.
I typically stick to... I think you're thinking of the Metal Mark?
Possibly.
Good old I'm always invisible.
Yep. But, like, we could be playing a campaign, and Cicada could go, okay, cool, the enemy types that we're facing are all, like, they're all... Like, one of the things the Metal Mark has is whenever you have soft cover, you essentially count as having hard cover against a shot. That's not exactly how it works, but it's close enough. And you can go, okay, well, everything that we're fighting is using seeking weapons, which ignore cover entirely. So I'm not having fun with the Metal Mark. So next time he levels up at the end of the mission, he takes all his Metal Mark levels and puts them in something else that's going to make my day worse.
Usually, yeah.
Yeah. The rally. There we go. You have 2 gears, Cicada. You're a metronome.
Hey, I've done other things successfully. I just do those specific things really well.
And he does. He really does.
Unlike a lot of people, I don't suffer from choice paralysis. I get locked in pretty quick.
You're not tethered to any of your choices. You are for the duration of a mission, which is a series of scenes, normally like 3 or 4 combats. But there's nothing stopping the GM giving what they call exotic gear or like narrative rewards where, for example, after you finish fighting this combat, you happen to find a old reparable frame for a different thing. And you can just like use that exotic gear to still have all your Metamark stuff, but shove it in the morning cloak or whatever. Like, it's very nice of being fluid. I think that's one of the things that I'd like to champion Lancer for. It's very forgiving for choices.
Yeah, the fact that it has built in just flat out like built in respec options is very indicative that it wants players to enjoy what they're doing.
Man, it sounds like I was worried over nothing. I thought it was going to be extremely complicated.
No, like when we get into, if we were to sit down and actually play a bit of Lancer, all those keywords that I was talking about earlier would probably be a bit much to just drop on you all at once. But for the most part, it's you shoot, you strip away their hit points.
And like, Lancer's really meant to be started from level 0 and played up. It's designed in a way there it slowly teaches you about its complexity.
Though, like, the actual working of the game itself doesn't massively shift. It's just the overwhelming amount of stuff doing things. Like, if I'm playing a Genghis at the moment, and the Genghis is the flamethrower mech. My Genghis at level 2 will not really be much different to a Genghis at level 12. I'll still move and boost and set something on fire. And that'll be the majority of my turns. But I'll just have more things that make doing that slightly easier.
Got it.
So one of the games that I did for kind of a lark was an Oops All Everests level 12. And the only issue with that game wasn't that it was complicated or like we're now having to look up level 9 spells and stuff. It was just the Everest being really good at what it does and being helped with more options. It's like, hey, do you want to take 7 turns in a turn? Sure. Well, you have 7 things to do. Awesome. I'm going to do all these things.
That whole game was quite a riot. Just like the sheer ridiculousness of the broken action economy of all of us just having all of this free movement and action all the time.
Oh, so fucking fun. And I had you on one of the standstill missions as well, which... I am not a large anime fan. I don't... There's been a couple of that I've seen that I've enjoyed, but I'm not a huge anime fan. I never really liked the mech genre specifically because, like, once you've seen one, you've kind of seen them all. It's like Godzilla movies. And the best one was in 1998. Cicada's having an aneurysm.
As a specific fan of both mechs and Godzilla, I am just like, but... As a fan of like mech shows and stuff, I am still very picky. I understand like where you are coming from with this.
Yeah,
outside of Mecha, I don't even watch anime.
Yeah, so Cicada's actually put me on to some Mecha, and like all the Mecha that he's put me on have been very interesting. It's just for the most part, it just feels like a rebranding of the old ones, and
which is funny because most of the ones I like are the old ones.
Yeah. So, was it you who put me on Votoms?
Yes, I was. Because you were going on about how you can't find a good series, and I'm like, all right.
And you know what? That was the best fucking time I've ever had watching an anime. Da-da-da! Da-da-da!
It was so good. Absolutely great. It gets that, like, grittiness so well, and, like...
But, despite the fact that I don't particularly like anime stuff, and Lancer is very anime-esque, it's not... So when you build a mech game, you either have to make it anime or you have to make it like Battletech. There is no in between.
This is true. I have, as a fan of the genre in general, that this is very much true. There is pretty much no other option.
So as someone who doesn't particularly like anime, because I don't like that it's all flashy and stuff's moving really quickly, or someone's just shouting in your face half the time. Shout out to Avatar The Last Airbender for not doing those things. Great show. Also, the live action series isn't bad. I actually quite enjoyed it. I'm sorry. Not the movie. The series. The series was fine. I will die on the hill that the series was watchable. Okay? But yeah, as someone who doesn't particularly like anime for being like obnoxious and doesn't like mechs for just being kind of like repeated the same thing over and over, Lancer made me a fan of those things somewhat. A lot of it's because of Cicada putting me on VTOMs. But like, I enjoy having my silly robot do fucking backflips. I enjoy being 30 meters tall, grappling some dude, and then just like by the face, and then just bulldozing him into an oncoming missile, because that's a thing you can do in Lancer. It's like, I love it. I think one of the players in one of my games, they had the most novel solution to a minefield problem I had. I had one of these enemy NPCs that just throws out a bunch of mines, and they very uniquely have the only entity in the game that's deployed outside of players' actual vision. Like, it's the only thing that's actually hidden from players. And another thing that I had was a dude who turns up and just takes a bunch of reactions to penalize you. So what this player did with his really fast mech was he just boosted over to the thing that was threatening to react with his machine gun, grappled him, and then just proceeded to run through the minefield area, just testing for mines with this guy, which, like, that feels very Lancer to me. Like, I'm sure you could see that happening in a game, Cicada.
That sounds like something Thompson would do.
There's a small chance it was Thompson, because Thompson has learned that you don't check for mines with your own face. Oh, poor Thompson. But yeah, like, if I was to build a mech game, it would absolutely be the exact opposite. It would be all your guns do like 5 to 8 damage and everyone has 60 hit points, because that's the kind of that, for me, that's mech magic. Like, obviously it would be more than just you whittling down hit points. There'd be a heat management. There'd be a system. This is just off topic, but like, I like that mechs, generally, I like that mechs are just immovable blocks of nope.
You like Battletech.
I actually don't like Battletech because it's not enough of what I want. I want a battley techier Battletech.
So you're a masochist. Got it.
Kinda, yeah. But Lancer very much favors the attacker in both ways. Like, you will, if you focus fire on a player or if you focus fire on an NPC, it'll very quickly disappear, as Cicada has never witnessed once in his life on either end. Sorry, by the way.
Nope. Which leads me to the next point of the agility trap. A lot of people coming from D&D will think, hey, boost my agility, make myself harder to hit. Like, you know, just like boosting my AC. No, it's really not worth, if you're trying to make yourself harder to hit, it's not worth to invest it. Because you make yourself a glass cannon, and when that hit does go through, it's really going to hurt.
Yeah. I know there's a single frame, I believe, from one of the non-core books, with one of the core bonuses that we haven't touched on, my bad. And if you put your agility up to max, you can have an evasion of 20, which is essentially like having an AC of 20. At which point the GM just hacks you because your E defense is still 6.
And also, at which point, which you would reach that level, the enemies can still hit you anyways with their to hit bonuses.
Oh, that's like level 4.
Is for 20? No. I think you have to max out agility to hit the 20.
Yeah, you take 2 at level 0. And then it only goes up to 6. First, that's second, true. Third, fourth.
Yeah, sure.
But Even worse, you're level 4. That's not a lot of hull.
No. And the frame you're doing it on, it is already the like lightest thing in the game that will
It's fucking hilarious. I love the thing.
In a game of mechs, you're basically a dude in a suit.
Yeah, which is funny because there is another mech known as the dude in the suit, which is slightly more mech than this one.
I'm out of questions.
Lancer is a game of paradoxes both in lore and in gameplay, but I mean that in the best possible way.
We did forget to like actually talk about the lore properly a little bit. Like, I don't want to explain the whole lore because there's a lot of it, and also it's behind a paywall. Which, I mean, I don't know how much trouble we'd get in all of it, but largely, humanity did what humanity does, and that is get on perfectly well and retire into obscurity with nuclear explosions over war. we made an oopsie. There was a bit of an oopsie. Earth kind of got a bit fucky. So mankind pushed itself out towards the stars. And then after huge amounts of times, like, can you remember how many years it is, Cicada?
No, I can't remember the exact amount.
Like, it's like scores of millennia. So 6,000 years before Union, we are currently 4,600 after Union. So 10.6 thousand years. So half of a singular score of millennium.
I should point out one of the key points of Lancer is this is the third version of the Union that we're on. The second one was the really, really bad version of humanity.
Yes, that's what I was going to touch on. We went out to the stars and we were like, nope, we're going to be better. And we were better. We founded Union, and Union was good. And then Union was bad with the second committee. So going back to a Star Trek analog, it went to that... there is constantly this eternal... I forget what it's called. Basically, they go to the fascist alternate universe.
I know. The evil versions of them.
Yeah, like... humanity goes out into the stars and is like, nah. Humans are great. I don't like your face prosthetics. You fucking nerds. I so fucking want to see, like, a Jim Kirk era fascist alternate universe of Star Trek when they first bump into Klingons. They're like, you guys are fucking weak. Look at us. We nuked our own planet for science like 100 fucking times. And the Klingons would just be like, but Batleth. Yeah, Batleth a nuke, motherfucker. Klingons just sitting there just like, wait, they're serious? Holy fuck.
That just leans into a specific type of sci-fi that just always kills me, and it's that trope of humanity is the big scary aliens out there.
I keep seeing that same Tumblr post. What if humans are the space orcs?
Yep.
I do love that. But yeah, so second committee took over, and as far as I'm aware, it wasn't anything like big at first. It wasn't like there was this violent overhaul of the capital city. It was just, you know, eventually enough people within it lent the wrong direction, and there was just enough momentum for it to start doing less great things. But after just a mere 1,400 years, second committee. Oh, sorry, that's the second expansion period. My bad. I actually can't remember when the second committee founded. But yeah, we're into the third committee now, and we're fixing stuff. We're fixing stuff, kind of.
We're trying.
And that's... that's what you're here to do. You're here to try and basically, like, the great premise here is that it takes so long for materials and communications to reach the far corners to where humanity has spread that there are certain pockets that are just remote enough that they can take advantage of this isolation and do things that maybe wouldn't be okay if they weren't isolated. Which is where you get all your cool lances.
There's no faster than light travel.
Yes, it's just not, it's not quite like Star Trek.
Got it.
Well, no, it isn't faster than life. That's the big thing. Like, it is, time dilates. And you can go from A to B, but there is still time there. But there is blink gates, and I've asked about blink gates a couple of times on the server, and I've got several answers on how fast that actually is. Some people explaining how it's instantaneous, and some people are saying no, it's almost, and some people saying no, it's actually faster. Great. I love asking a simple question and getting three completely different answers. To be fair, the fourth answer I got was how fast you want it to be, which, to be fair, is the correct answer for all narratives. It's not a particularly helpful one, but it's the correct one for most narratives. But yeah, there are pirates that will do piracy. Yeah, there's just small pockets of shenanigans that you're there to stop. Shantigan. So one of the things that we didn't touch on was that there are four major companies in the lore, and each one of those four has a bunch of mech frames in the book, and they all have like their own motivations and whatnot. And, you know, they're all doing stuff on their own anyway, whether it be science or shipping, and then whether that science and shipping is legal or not, whether that legal shipping is known or not, whether someone wants to act on that known shipping or not, it all cascades down, and like, there's plot aplenty. Important point, Faith is actually aware of the writer of Lancer.
Yes. So the writer of Lancer does one of my favorite graphic novels / webcomics called Kill 6 Billion Demons. I am ashamed to say that I don't know his actual name, except that it is Tom, and because I mostly see, like, he signs his posts on Kill 6 Billion Demons as Abaddon, so that's how I know him. And that's it. That's my exposure to it.
So you have a good idea of what the lore is really like.
Yeah, I do.
Heavy.
It is heavy, very heavy. The guy was, so just basing it off of Kill 6 Billion Demons as a point of reference, which was heavily inspired by 36 Sermons of Vivek from Elder Scrolls 3 Morrowind. So that there is like really heavy lore in and of itself. So it's the guy just loves world building, and he does an amazing job.
Yeah, I also read Kill 6 Billion Demons. I even have a couple of the hard copies on the shelf.
Oh, I plan on getting them.
I think I have 1 and 2 so far.
Nice.
Yeah, 1 and 2.
I should start.
You really should. It's a fantastic read.
I just don't have a lot of time to read, like, just casually.
We talked about this, Lewis.
Tom has also made a skirmish war game that is very Kill 6 Billion Demons inspired, because it is just necromancers fighting each other.
Oh, is that the Metallica or Metallic game?
Oh, I meant to have a look at that. I never did.
I've taken some brief glances, and I kind of like it. It's got this, from my brief glance, and this is a gross oversimplification, but it's kind of got this sort of asymmetrical chess feeling to it.
Nice. What was that one called?
Let me check.
It's got one of those titles that I'm not even going to try to say.
Here, I can do it. I know I can.
I believe in you.
Magna Gothica Malagast.
That sounds correct.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've seen some art from that, and it was very Tom. A big, big thumbs up. Well done. As I said, I should read the rules.
There is a Foundry module for it now too, I think.
Gosh.
So we'll have to add that as like a system of the month or something on Cairn.
No, maybe.
it is specifically a war game.
Maybe. Like, I'm really, really jonesing for a chance to relive my War Machine glory days. War Machine being what I used to replace Games Workshop when I left Warhammer, because it was so much cheaper and so many less models on the table and so much faster combat and so much more interesting combat as well. I'm sorry, I know you still play it. I'm not trying to shit on it. The scale allows for different things.
No, I totally understand what you're saying, though, and all of those things are extremely valid.
Yeah, I played Kador because I got to have the stompy robot who could, you know, take 6 billion fucking hits and then slug out an attack still. So maybe a war game is in order. Maybe. But then again, Cicada has fully infected me with the mech plague. How's it called again? Aether Nexus?
Oh, yeah.
That's a big one that's on my radar now. Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
Are there any closing thoughts on Lancer? I mean, I feel like I want to try it now that I know that it's not as complicated as it looks.
I can absolutely whip up a level zero thing for the Sunday group if you wish.
Yeah, that could be fun.
It is just, for the most part, it is just the biggest hurdle, I think, for getting into Lancer is not knowing everything on your first day, which ties in a little bit to what Cicada was saying about analysis paralysis. The first time you see it, you see all these, like, I think there's 20 weapons that all do different stuff, and it's not like this Warhammer does 1d8 bludgeoning, this longsword does 1d8 piercing, this war axe does 1d8 slashing. It is, this weapon does this thing, and this thing, and this thing. This weapon does these four different things. This weapon does slightly more damage, but does something else. And like, there's lots of questions as to how valuable or worthwhile those things are. But yeah, it's fine. We can do something on a Sunday. Nice and easy.
All right. I'm down for that.
Yep. So I've run a lot of Lancer now. I think it's great fun. I've done a couple of campaigns, as one as player, one as leader. Cicada was kind enough to grace me as a player. Ruined everything in the perfect way. Like, I specifically got, like, the big end boss was specifically one of the ones that are the most notoriously difficult and painful to kill. But they worked it out. They solved it.
I mean, it was painful to kill, but, like, I just decided I was not going to give up.
Yeah.
You believed in the heart of the cards?
Also, Cicada decided that he was going to one-shot every airplane in the game.
No, I'm pretty sure.
To the detriment of the actual game as well at one point, because he ended up squaring off against one in a corner rather than take on the boss. But he was adamant.
I think I only missed one and someone else got it.
I still think, what's his name? What was his name? Sprocket or something? The mini boss, the lieutenant.
Brocket, oh my gosh. Still one of my favorite characters.
I fucking love him. Like, his entire deal was to just be an unkillable roadblock, and in no instance did either anyone try to kill him or consider him a roadblock. It was just this big fucking dude who, the first time they encountered him, they just sort of teleported away and just said nope. And the second time they encountered him, they literally threw him in a hole and just went nope. I love it.
the whole time just like in character, just berating this guy in every way possible.
No, I'll have my revenge.
No, you won't. Like,
yeah. No, come back and fight me.
Nope.
So do you have any closing thoughts for Lancer? What you want to see in the future from it, maybe? Advice getting into it?
Honestly, people should definitely try Lancer if they want a little bit more of a war game itch out of their role-playing, and in general just want to try something new. Yeah, that's all I can really say. You know, it's just like, it's definitely something I enjoy doing. It's definitely something that gets the brain moving once you're doing it. And
oh yeah. Like, once you do hit that treadmill, you start keeping pace quite well. It's,
yeah,
it's pretty nice about that. And it's only about 5 years now.
Yeah, and it's really easy to get into as a player with a lot of like the content just available for free.
Oh yeah,
that's
a big thing. Like, the actual core book is available. It's just the GM facing stuff that's hidden behind a paywall.
GM facing stuff and all the lore.
And all the lore. So, you know, the stuff that players generally don't care too much about. Not zero, but less. I don't know. I'm also like, I'm picky about my lore. I've got some games where I just don't know jack about the lore. Like, I played through Traveller. I'm not learning the Traveller lore. But yeah, no, Lance's great. I run it most weeks. I am trying to reduce the amount of Lancer just to give other things some breathing space.
I only ever try to ask for like one or two games now.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Do feel free if you see like a game which is like lacking people to be like, hey, do you want to swap that to Lancer? to mirror what you were saying earlier, like right at the start, one of the things that I don't run all the games I play because I want people to play my systems that I enjoy. I want people to play more systems so that they've tried at least a second system and they've seen a different way of looking at the same problem. And worst case scenario, they have an okay evening. People tend to enjoy my games. This is coming to bite me in the ass now because third edition has got insanely popular over the last 2 weeks. I don't know what to do with this. But like, you come, you play Lancer and go, oh, that's interesting. You have a little bit of fun. But I don't particularly like the way they do like anime mechs. I want to do that cool thing that Lewis was describing where they stand there for 20 hours and just chip each other to death. That sounds really cool and interesting. I'm aware of the limitations of my own imagination here, okay? The kind of mech that I like is very boring thematically. I get it. And then go away and go, and if they just go away and think, but the accuracy and difficulty thing was a nice way of doing it. Like, if that's all you take away from the night, I consider that a success. Or, like, you play DCC and you realize that DCC uses either the luck mechanic or it has the dice chain where if you want to do something cool, I let you roll a d24 rather than a d20. Or the way if you take one thing away from the night, I think that was a successful night. I want the most people to try the most things to spread on. And Lancer is really good because, as you say, you can get all the player facing stuff for free. There's a character building for free. And what has really helped the games that I run is that free character creator for the free player rules that you have will generate a code that you can copy and just blop, copy that into Foundry. And Foundry will build, the Foundry VTT will just build your mech there and boom, you're done. There is very little work involved. I may have rambled.
Well, that's what we do here, Lewis. Come on.
We are the Ramblin' Ramblers. Do. But yeah, no, I do quite like the Lancer lore. The art is absolutely fire because it's mostly done by Tom. Partially. So there's a amount of Tom's art in Tom's mech game.
Yeah, quite a lot of the art is done by Tom.
Yes. I remember when the when Kill 6 Billion Demons stopped updating for a little bit, so just so he could work exclusively on Lancer.
Nice. He does have a very... like, there's a lot of the art here that just doesn't feel like a thing. It feels like a lived-in thing. A thing that's been used.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I like Lancer. It's very good. I recommend it to everyone. Especially as, for the most part, it's entirely free. You don't need to buy 6 copies of the player handbook. You can get it all on itch.io. I think that's about it, really. Unless the guest speaker has any extra notes.
Play Lancer. Make broken builds.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, I guess that's that. So, till next time, everybody. Do as Cicada says. Play Lancer, make broken builds.
Yeah. Broken builds for the win.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Later.
If you would like to play DCC or any other roleplay game that we mention in this podcast, get in contact with us at Twitter @GrumpyDeck or find our Discord link in bio and pinned comment.
Special thanks to Reichelt for sprucing up our cute little logo and to Tim from TabletopAudio.com for our intro and outro music. We hope you enjoyed this episode and we will see you next time.